The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. We're going to be talking a little bit here at the outset on Iranian propaganda and how the media are just running with quite a lot of that propaganda. All of the stories surrounding the funeral of Qasem Soleimani. And also, I think, an important article on U.S. isolationism and even how, I think a week or two ago, we talked about how President Trump really has taken control of the Republican Party and his thinking, what he thinks about the Middle East, what he thinks about foreign policy. It really is spreading through the party, and it's leading to, as we've written about so many times over the years at thetrumpet.com, it's leading to a Middle East without a strong presence from the United States. We'll come to that a little bit later in this segment as well. And if we have time later on today's program, there's just so many news events worth discussing. But if we have some time at the end, we'll talk about what the Bible says regarding the heart or the mind of man. Well, Richard tells me that our live audience just continues to grow. We're getting some good feedback coming in each day as well. One listener says, in getting the year started off with many, many bangs, the fireworks set off by the hands of partiers are nothing compared to the incendiary natural disasters and man-made explosions yet to come. It says, will the explosions that have already rocked the news cycle increase to a crescendo as the new Roman year moves on, or will the trouble therein continue as more of a slow burn? Well, that's the reason why you need to watch or listen into this program every day so that you know if it's a crescendo or if it's happening as a slow burn. There certainly, as I say, there certainly are quite a few events that need to be covered, so much of significance happening on a daily basis. This listener says, where I live in Australia, we've endured choking smoke and suffocating heat for days, but the actual fires have not reached us here. I can't tell you how disgusted I am at the constant propaganda of climate change while all but ignoring the locking up of national parks, prevention of hazard burns, and having a small army of arsonists running amok. It says there are a good many Australians who do acknowledge this, but they are drowned out by the hysterical, demented climate cultists, and too few politicians are brave enough to speak out, it says. And of course, as you mentioned, Australia, much like the rest of the world, brought in homosexual marriage and then all kinds of other sins as well. This one here says, please pray for us in Australia and for our Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, that he'll have wisdom. Another listener says, sad how President Trump is a physical blessing right now, and yet half of all Americans couldn't be further from a true patriotic American. Satan is truly powerful. No gratefulness among today's people. And then a last few short ones here says, listening every morning before work, thank you. Another one says, hello from Murrells Inlet, South Carolina, watching before heading out to work. Another listener says, love the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. One writes, been studying for over 30 years, and Bible prophecies being fulfilled every day. Lastly, it says, thank you for the program. What an eye-opener. That comes in from Roxborough, North Carolina. So if you'd like to submit some feedback, you can email us at td@kpcg.fm or leave a comment at one of our social media sites. Well, there was a piece at the Babylon Bee. This is a satire site, a conservative site that mocks modern leftism. And of course, the radical left doesn't take to that too kindly. This headline from the Bee the other day, it said, Democrats call for flags to be flown at half-mast to grieve the death of Soleimani. And there were a lot of liberals that were very much offended by this this satirical article at the Babylon Bee. Well, I think it was a guy at CNN that says that this Babylon Bee article has been shared as much on social media as some of the more popular articles at the Washington Post and the New York Times. He tweeted out, this CNN reporter, a lot of people are sharing this satirical story on Facebook and they don't know it's satire. So CNN and the rest of the media, they're very much offended by this joke. And yet, when you listen to them, when they're very serious now, when they're reporting on Soleimani and the events happening in the Middle East, when you listen to them, they may not be calling for the flags to be flown at half-mast, but they are more, you can feel them mourning the death of this terrorist. One that, what was it the Washington Post called him? A revered leader. Listen to this montage put together by Grabian on the funeral procession for Soleimani, clip 3.
He was a war hero, the commander of Iran's feared Quds force.
Qasem Soleimani was no ordinary general. The U.S. officially classified him as a terrorist, but in Iran, he was a national hero.
He's regarded as personally incredibly brave. The troops love him.
I was trying to think of somebody, and I was thinking of De Gaulle.
A revered figure in Iran and some other places in the Middle East.
Smart, charismatic, ruthless, strategic, and bold. His power made Iranians proud.
But even many of Soleimani's enemies admitted he was a military genius.
Qasem Soleimani was an evil genius.
Soleimani was in charge of spreading Iranian influence around the world, and he was extremely good at it.
He is the, think of the French Foreign Legion, you know, if you will.
By killing Qasem Soleimani, the U.S. has stripped Iran of an inspirational military leader.
The crowds are massive and emotional. There are many tears here.
Thousands of mourners on the streets in Iran. Symbolic caskets aloft, weeping and chanting, I am Soleimani.
The supreme leader of Iran weeping and praying over a coffin draped in the Iraqi flag.
It's difficult to convey how revered he is.
There was talk in Iran Soleimani might be a future president or perhaps even a supreme leader.
You can see why the left was so offended by that Babylon Bee piece, because it strikes just a little bit too close to home. There's more truth in that Babylon Bee piece than there is in these institutions, these great institutions, the way they see themselves, CNN, the New York Times, the Washington Post. And here they are just eagerly carrying out Iranian propaganda. We'll come more to the funeral procession, some of the pictures that have gone around the world regarding that. I think another a Washington Post or somebody, She works for a news agency. She tweeted out a picture of the following at the Soleimani procession, the Soleimani funeral, and then put it alongside the people that turned out for President Trump's inauguration. The point being that, hey, he's more popular than President Trump. They're still on that. The picture of the people at the inauguration from 2017. President Trump, he was on Rush Limbaugh's show yesterday, and listen to what he said about this terrorist and the way that he's being covered in the Western media. This is clip 10.
Well, I just think it's a party of common sense. You know, I view it, somebody said, are you conservative? Well, I'm conservative, but I think it's common sense. It was like what we did this 2 days ago with this horrible terrorist. He was a terrorist. You know, they don't want to call him a terrorist. Now the Democrats are trying to make him sound like he was this wonderful human being.
Right. And we played for you the other day how that they're he's reciting poetry. They're bringing back images or video of Soleimani reading poems. He's revered. He's a scholar. The Ayatollah's crying over his coffin. Well, the other narrative, if I can just I'll come to that in just a second. The other narrative is that this is very, very bad for the Trump presidency. He's blowing up the Middle East. It's a dangerous, dangerous moment now. They're sure to retaliate. They've pulled out of the JCPOA. This is MSNBC anchor Katie Tour. Here she is expressing her amazement at the size of the funeral. Clip one.
A stunning show of solidarity just a few weeks after anti-government protests threatened to destabilize the country. It seems President Trump did what the Iranian government has been unable to do, unite the country.
So they were divided until last week. Now they're very much united because of President Trump. He's brought the whole of Iran together. They've rallied around the general. He's now a martyr. To their credit at the Washington Post, at least they printed this op-ed. This is from an Iranian journalist, an activist, Mahsa Alinejad, it says here. She says, without doubt, Soleimani had support among hardliners and regime loyalists. The regime is not taking any chances, though. In the city of Ahvaz, where large numbers of people turned out to mourn Soleimani, the government has forced students and officials to attend. It provided free transport and ordered shops to be shut down. According to videos sent to me by people inside the country, the authorities are making little kids write essays praising the fallen commander. First graders who didn't know how to write were encouraged to cry for Soleimani. This is all pushed by this authoritarian regime, this radical Islamist regime. They know the Western media cameras are going to be there. They know people like Katie Tour are going to be there saying, I've never seen anything like this. This is a tremendous show of support for the general, for the Ayatollah, for the mullahs. This Iranian journalist says, there are many Iranian voices who think Soleimani was a war criminal, but Western journalists rarely reach out to them. They rarely reach out to them because they don't want to know the truth. They don't want to broadcast the truth. They just want to run with anything that will make this current president look terrible. It says, ironically, the Western media is more skeptical of such state-organized events in other countries, such as Russia or North Korea, but seems to leave its critical sense at the border when it comes to the Islamic Republic. She says, while it's true that Western correspondents face daunting conditions when it comes to reporting the truth from Iran, that shouldn't excuse the many times they've shown unwarranted gullibility toward the official version of events. See, there have been other reports that have talked about the Iranian government offering free meals. They shut down the shops. They force government officials, students to go. They put the crying kids out in front of the cameras. And then they offer free food. And people turn out, tens of thousands of them, in some cases because they have to. But here's MSNBC saying, what a stunning show of solidarity. Listen to Richard Engel at NBC. This is clip two.
Now, after this killing, you saw people not only going out in the streets in millions, as Ali was describing, he was there, but throwing articles of their own clothing up onto the coffin so that attendants could rub it on the coffin so that they would have some sort of memento of an object that was close to Qasem Soleimani's body. They turned him into a martyr, if not a saint.
No, I think that's what you're doing, you and the media. Turning this man into a saint, this man who killed at least 600 American soldiers, and who knows how many thousands and thousands of people throughout the Middle East, Muslims, Christians alike, coming from Damascus into Baghdad so that he could carry out another attack against the United States forces. And now they're wanting to turn him into a saint. Listen to the media. And then you go to the Babylon Bee, and it's not even really that funny, because it's practically the truth. Well, as I say, the other highlight from all of this, or point that is striking, is how that his enemies, President Trump's enemies, are saying that this is just going to be a disaster. Ben Rhodes had a piece at The Atlantic, an extraordinarily dangerous moment, he said. He was right there working on the JCPOA with President Obama and just bragging about how they lied to get that through Congress. Here are all the Democrat, candidates. I think most of these are presidential candidates, and their reaction. They had to be pretty careful with the way they reacted following the killing Thursday night. But here's a collection of some of their statements aimed at President Trump. Clip 4.
Tragically, his actions now put us on the path to another war.
He's been erratic and unsuccessful in almost every previous foreign policy endeavor. This one is the most dangerous of all.
We are not safer today than we were before Donald Trump acted.
We seem to have accomplished what Soleimani was trying to do but couldn't. So in death, he's actually accomplished his goal.
Taking out a bad guy is not a good idea unless you are ready for what comes next.
This is and was an enormous escalation.
So they all read from the same talking points, and you hear them repeated among the Democrats, in the media. Ben Rhodes, as I say, he talks about the achievements of the previous administration, Barack Obama. He writes, this is at The Atlantic, "These achievements are worth revisiting because any hope of saving the Iran deal likely died with the killing of Qasem Soleimani." They were in full compliance, as I was saying yesterday. That's the false narrative that they're out there pushing. Now that Soleimani's been targeted, well, there's no hope. There's no hope for appeasement. Rhodes says, indeed, it's no surprise that the Iranian government has indicated that it will no longer abide by the limits on its nuclear power imposed by the JCPOA. What Trump could do, well, this is further on in his piece, talking about what Donald Trump has done from the beginning. He says what Trump could do is lie about the Iran deal, and he did so relentlessly. This is the same individual who admitted he lied to the American people, to Congress, and to journalists. Remember what he said about the journalists, Ben Rhodes. They literally know nothing. That's what he said about the journalists, the media. They're so easy to fool because they literally know nothing. That's what he said when he was explaining how they were able to get the JCPOA to go right through Congress to be approved. Because the media were so happy to take their lies and to run with it. It's all about the narrative. Listen to what Jonathan Alter, he's, I think, at NBC as well. Listen to what he said yesterday, clip 5.
Right, I think that's what's maybe most frightening about it. Let's assume for a minute that he was at the Baghdad airport and deserved this, okay? Let's just stipulate that. And let's just say maybe it was the right decision to take him out. But you have, in that case, right decision, wrong commander-in-chief. So you need somebody at the helm who can navigate skillfully an extraordinarily complex set of events that he has now set in motion.
He's on MSNBC. Right decision, wrong commander-in-chief. If only it could have been Barack Obama or someone like him that would have carried out this strike. Imagine how different the coverage would be, by the way, if that were the case. I mean, Obama was in charge there when they took out Osama bin Laden, and I think that was universally cheered in Western media outlets. But then, like President Trump said yesterday, when it comes to Baghdadi, they hardly report on it. And now you come to Soleimani, and of course, this is a dangerous, dangerous moment. He's been able to accomplish, because of President Trump, Soleimani's been able to accomplish in his death what he couldn't accomplish during his life. Well, shifting gears here for a second, this article by Victor Davis Hanson, What is the Middle East in the Middle of Anymore? And the gist of this article is that, hey, basically I can, this is a great historian, by the way. We quote from him frequently. But here is this historian saying, I can kind of see where Donald Trump's coming from. Why do we even need to be in the Middle East? Let me just to step back for a moment and to give us the bigger picture. Let me play for you what my father said. This is last year, just a few months ago, a German, it was the program on A German Whirlwind Conquers Iran. And he's talking here about the Daniel 11 and verse 40 clash between the King of the North and the King of the South. This is clip 8.
Well, I can tell you from Bible prophecy that they're not going to have a war with America, they're not going to have a war with Britain, and they're not going to have a war with even the Jewish state, which is very close to them, or the country of called Israel today. But that there is a nation that is going to, or a military power that's going to come against them with a military whirlwind, according to Bible prophecy. And it's going to overwhelm them, and they're going to actually trigger World War III.
It's a pretty remarkable statement. He's talking about Iran there, of course. And he's saying Iran's not going to have a war with America or Britain or even little Israel. Now, if you just come out from out of the blue and hear a statement like that, you'd think, well, he's going way out on a limb. But this is all based on your Bible, what your Bible prophesies. Iran's not going to go to war with America or Britain or Judah. You look at Daniel 11 and verse 40, and you see that the coming war is between Iran and its allies and the German-led European Empire. Now, Victor Davis Hanson, in his article, he talks about two questions that now arise in the 21st century. To what degree do strategic reasons remain for a strong U.S. ground presence in the Middle East? And in terms of cost-benefit analyses, how much material, human, and psychic U.S. investment is necessary to protect our interests to the extent they still matter in the region? So he's basically saying, look, the U.S. is energy independent now, so we don't need to go into the Middle East like we used to protect the oil or the channels through which the oil travels. That's no longer a need. In fact, it's more important or significant for Europe and for China to be concerned about these things. We have enough oil ourselves. He says the United States does not need Middle East natural gas or oil. Europe does. China does even more. We've reached energy independence, says Victor Davis Hanson. So you can see what he's saying. He's basically saying, why bother? Why are we wasting so many of our precious resources in the sands of the Middle East? Hanson says, certainly it may be in the larger economic interests of America to keep moderately priced oil flowing from the Middle East, but disruptions, cartels, and embargoes do not matter to the United States in the degree they did during the last half century. This reality is especially germane when the European Union, larger and nearly as rich as the United States, simply will not provide for its own security. Despite its proximity to the region and its dependence upon it. You see the message, President Trump's message, the Jeroboam message, it's getting through to even some of these very sharp conservatives. The message is Europe's got to be, it's got to be paying its fair share. It's got to take on more responsibility. Now, you've heard all of this. You've heard all of this at the Trumpet for many, many years. We've told you what's going to be happening to the Middle East. How that the U.S. presence is on the way out. Hansen says, China likewise freeloads on the U.S. Navy's deterrent presence in waters off the Middle East. So why should we continue with this same policy when China freeloads off us, Europe takes advantage of us, and we really don't need the oil like we used to? Some would say, well, but what about Israel? You've got a strong ally there in Israel. You've got to be there to protect them to some extent. And Hansen's argument or response to that is, well, Israel's strong. Israel has nuclear weapons. Israel doesn't need U.S. assistance like it used to. Listen to Victor Davis Hansen. As I say, he comes from the conservative wing, the conservative Trump-supporting wing of the Republican Party. And certainly Sean Hannity does as well, the commentator on Fox News. Listen to what Sean Hannity said last night on his program, clip six.
And no, we can't and we won't be going with boots on the ground in Iran. That's not going to happen. And frankly, it's not necessary. Instead, the president's been clear. We will strategically take out the mullah's ability to continue this reckless behavior, this saber rattling, these attempts to bribe other countries or get paid or blackmail other countries. They are not going to be able to disrupt the lifeblood of the world's economy, oil, as much as they've been trying. Now, we are not, and let me be clear, I do not support boots on the ground. After Vietnam and Iraq and the swamp creatures, they send our brave men and women, our national treasure, door to door, endless wars. And then they say, never mind, those days must forever be over.
Those days must forever be over. Vietnam, Iraq, all these swamp creatures in Washington that send our boys off to the Middle East and then basically abandon them or restrict their movements. Or tie their hands behind their backs? Why should we keep doing it? He says. Echoing some of the same points brought out in the Victor Davis Hansen column. Hansen says, any success in weeding out terrorist enclaves or removing thugs is outweighed by often costly human and material investments, subsequent problems with immigration and refugees, and almost no reciprocity or even gratitude from the parties who are supposedly the beneficiaries of American humanitarian or military assistance. Well, you've got to maintain a presence to tamp down some of the terrorist acts, the terrorist behaviors. And his response to that is, well, why should we do that? People aren't even thankful for it. And then on Israel, he says Israel is wealthier, larger, and more secure than at any period in its past. Three recent developments, fossil fuel self-sufficiency, new anti-Iranian alliances with its former enemies in the Arab world, and global weariness with the perpetual victimization claims of the Palestinians. People are just tired of even the Palestinian grievances. You don't hear as much about it like you used to. But then he says, you know, Israel's strong, and they also have since Iran has risen to the fore, Israel's been working on this anti-Iranian alliance with some of their Arab neighbors, Arab countries that used to be very, very, very much hostile to the Israeli state. And really what you can see there is the Psalm 83 alliance. Now, eventually, those Arab states are going to align themselves not with Israel, not with the United States, but with Germany. We know that from Psalm 83. That's in the King of the South booklet. Brent Noctegal had a piece last year, March 2019. He says here, Secretary of State Pompeo is trying to create an Arab alliance to counter Iran. The Bible indicates that such an alliance will form, but the U.S. will not be part of it. So there's some betrayals that are prophesied to happen, but you can begin to see the formation of these alliances. That's what's prophetically so significant. The Psalm 83 alliance, by the way, that made it onto the list of our top 20 fulfilled prophecies I think it was number 17 on the list. You can see that somewhere. I forgot to check where, at the Trumpet.com website. But switching back to Victor Davis Hanson's piece, it says here, the idea that the United States will ever send a huge expeditionary army to the Middle East increasingly seems absurd. Why should we? Sean Hannity, in that clip I just played for you, he talked about the new generation of warfare. We saw a bit of it with the killing of Soleimani. It was just some guy at some base in Georgia, I think it was, pushing a button. And then it takes out this terrorist halfway around the world. That's what Sean Hannity says modern war should essentially be for the United States. Just let somebody, you know, at a base in Nevada or Georgia or Florida, let them take care of it with the push of a button. But no boots on the ground. This is one thing they can all agree on. We've talked before about the escalating debt. Democrats and Republicans alike, we all agree on it. Spend, spend, spend. Well, here's another one. We all agree that we should bring all of our boys home and let the rest of the world, let other nations take care of their own backyard. You see where this is leading? Hanson says here, Europe's immigration policies are the canaries in the Western mine. Few of the 800 million in Europe and the United States privately believe that Europe is richer, more secure, and more enlightened by welcoming in millions of Middle Easterners who seems to resent their host. They seem to resent their hosts and equate assimilation and integration with cultural betrayal. They come in by the millions. They resent their host countries. France, Germany, the UK, and then they don't assimilate. They don't want to. And he points out here, whether it's the millions in Europe or the hundreds of millions in the United States, they know privately, they're not going to say it openly, but they know privately that it doesn't make Europe richer and more secure. So why should we worry about it when it's really in Europe's neighborhood? It's in Europe's backyard. Brent, in his piece, if I can find it real quick, it's a little bit later in my notes. He says, President Trump wants to bring the U.S. forces back from the Middle Eastern battlefields and force allies, rather, to pay their fair share in mutual defense. It says, while some may rejoice over America's withdrawal from the Middle East, the Bible reveals that its absence portends the most destructive period this war-weary region has ever seen. It says, every important biblical prophecy that takes place in the Middle East occurs in a power vacuum created by America's exit. Yes, indeed. That's why this is prophetically significant. Every important Bible prophecy regarding the Middle East, it occurs in a power vacuum created by America's exit. I played this clip for you yesterday. Here's part of what I played yesterday anyway, clip 7.
We do not seek war. We do not seek nation building. We do not seek regime change. But as president, I will never hesitate to defend the safety of the American people, you.
That's the red line. He's proven now that he will have someone push a button somewhere to retaliate if American lives are threatened. But he is not interested in war, in nation building. He's not even interested in regime change. If you want a crazy to run your country, that's fine by me. That's the message. And again, given the disasters like Mr. Armstrong wrote about in the United States and Britain in Prophecy, and Sean Hannity mentioned it there, Vietnam didn't go well, Iraq didn't go well, it's just been a string of losses. So you can see why now that they're saying, you know, and these are conservatives, mind you. You can see why they're now saying, what's the point? Let's just use our technology where we can. And another point to be made here is it's going to show how dependent we will be on technology. And what about when the technology fails us? And then you have no presence there. Going back to what my father said, this is actually an earlier Key of David from 2016. Here's clip 9.
But they noticed that it's the king of the north and the king of the south, singular, the Ayatollah. And there's going to be a strong man from Europe come on the scene. And he's going to be the power then that causes the European Union to attack and destroy the king of the south, or Iran, and their allies. It's all about who's going to rule the Middle East. We have a booklet on Germany's secret strategy to destroy Iran. You ought to read that, because they are planning for, well, a situation where they might have to fight the king of the south. And you notice when it says there that those two powers clash, America is out of it. They're not even in the picture. Britain's not even in the picture either. And you can do a little proving and see that very clearly, why they're out. They're going to be a victim and not a part of any victory at all.
That's from 2016. Just to finish the point Victor Davis Hanson makes, he says the administration wants to find a way out of both Iraq and Afghanistan that does not destroy U.S. Deterrence. So my father brings out in that clip you just heard that the prophecy says we're not even in the picture. That's where this is leading. The U.S., not even in the picture. That's the striking detail, one of them, from Daniel 11 and verse 40. Talks about these two powers, these two kings, and this spectacular clash. And the U.S. is not even part of it. It's not even mentioned. So we want out, and then like Brent brings out in his piece from last year, every important biblical prophecy that takes place in the Middle East occurs in that power vacuum. Spiegel had a piece today on German foreign policy. Europe's reluctant leader, it says. And it talks about how that the whole world is waiting. It's waiting for Germany to step forward, to flex its muscle as far as foreign policy is concerned, to show itself to be the real force that it can be. This is in Spiegel's piece. Many Americans have grown weary of constant war. It talks about how that President Trump and the Democratic candidates, they agree on this, isolationism. It says this would have enormous consequences for Germany should the Islamic State regain strength. Again, if the U.S. leaves, what if the Islamic State regains strength? Or if Iraq descended into civil war, the Europeans would be forced to cope with the consequences without the U.S. at their side. Wow. It says Trump and many Democrats want to leave Germany and the Europeans to their own fate in the coming years. We don't see how dangerous this is. President Trump doesn't. Victor Davis Hanson doesn't. Sean Hannity doesn't. It's hard not to sympathize with where they're coming from, given what's happened in Vietnam, in Iraq, and elsewhere since the end of World War II. And then the cost, the tremendous cost in terms of lives, and of course money too. Strength is being spent in vain. So why should we go over there and spend it? Spiegel says the world is waiting for Germany. The country's partners and other actors on the geopolitical stage alike are waiting for the long twilight of the Merkel era to end and for Germany to find itself again. What was it one of our listeners said? I read it to you at the start. These world events, sometimes rising or increasing to a crescendo, or in some cases, they continue on like a slow burn. And some of that has been what's happened in Germany. Things that we've been preparing you for years. And just the fact that it's happened in a slower, step-by-step way doesn't take anything away from the accuracy of the prophecy. The world is waiting for Germany, says Spiegel. The world is waiting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States. One in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror. Their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Well, since this is the first and probably last program in which I will reference the Babylon Bee, I couldn't resist pointing you to another story. Keep in mind, this is satire here, but this is titled Iranian Leaders Vow to Destroy American Cultural Sites like Walmart or Dairy Queen. And just the first paragraph alone, it says, immediately after President Trump's announcement on Twitter that he had pre-selected 52 targets in Iran for destruction, including sites important to Iran's people and ancient culture, Iran's top leaders and generals vowed that they would retaliate in kind as soon as they could figure out what a rapidly declining culture that no longer values its own history or religious heritage still holds dear. That's from the Babylon Bee, making fun of the fact that there's not a lot of cultural sites left in the United States that we even value. Well, let me switch sharply to the direction of the human mind, or the human heart, as it's called in the Bible. You might recall from a few weeks ago, those clips we played of Nancy Pelosi when someone asked her if she hated Donald Trump, and she got very angry about that and said she was a Catholic. She didn't hate anybody in the world. She had love in her heart and she prayed. She prays for President Trump, she said. And following that, I talked a good bit about the fruits. Well, let's look at the fruits. Let's look at what she actually has done, or things that she actually has said. And added to that, consider. She brought up religion, prayer, and Catholicism. But consider for a moment what the Bible says about the human heart. Romans 8:7 says the carnal mind is enmity against God. It's not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. There's a built-in hostility toward God and his law because of Satan the devil. He's the god of this world, and he's broadcasting his attitudes, his impulses, his ideas, his thoughts, his anger, his rage, his division and strife, his propaganda. Ephesians 2:2. He's bombarding us with this. the prince of the power of the air. And he's cast down and confined to this earth. And he's filled with white-hot rage. This is the normal attitude or nature that we have unless we're plugging in to God's law and to his Holy Spirit. Verse 8 says, so then they that are in the flesh cannot please God. You can't please God in the flesh. If we're to please God, if we're to worship God, it has to be of the Spirit. There has to be a miraculous change. We have to let the mind of Jesus Christ in, as Philippians 2 says. A few other verses, Deuteronomy 5, verse 29. Moses laments, oh, that there was such a heart in them. The people of Israel, he means. Oh, if they only had a heart that would fear me, that would fear God and keep all my commandments, always. If they only had a heart to obey, God says, they didn't have it. 1 Kings 8 and verse 38 talks about the plague of the human heart. And then you're familiar with Jeremiah 17 and verse 9, of course. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. It's desperately wicked. Verse 5 of that same chapter says we're under a curse if we trust in man. If we trust in a human being. Proverbs chapter 16, I'll just take you through a few verses here. It's a wonderful chapter. It has a lot of, there's quite a few verses in Proverbs 16 about the human heart. Verse 25, it says, there is a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. There's a way that seems right. This is why we have to judge by fruits, by the way. Because so much of the time, you see this on the news over and again. Their first reaction, what it is they say immediately, and then how it's just in so many ways, flat out wrong, false, fake. There's a way that seems right, but the end thereof are the ways of death. God actually repeats that in Proverbs 14. Almost the exact same language. This lesson is so important that God has it in the Proverbs twice. It seems right. Boy, this seems like the way to go here. But we get it wrong. More and more we get it wrong because, well, certainly because we're drifting far from God. Back up to verse 1, Proverbs 16, it says, the preparations of the heart in man and the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. In other words, we might have our hopes and dreams and desires, but it's God who has the final say. It should be. Otherwise, we're just going to be out there making mistakes right and left. Unless God has the final say, unless we bring God into it, it's going to end in disaster. That's what so many of these prophecies I alluded to in the first segment, that's where they're leading. World war, talk about a disaster and a failure too, to just even learn the lesson from history. To say nothing of the flat-out rejection of Bible prophecy. That's a problem too. Down in verse 33, it says, the lot is cast into the lap, but the whole disposing thereof is of the eternal. The whole disposing of thereof is of the eternal. That final phrase in Proverbs 16:33. It can be literally rendered from the Hebrew, the final judgment on everything is of the eternal. God has the final say. He is the final judge. He is the soul, as we say in Principles of Living, he's the sole authority for morality, for right and wrong. That's why we have to look to his Bible for instructions. It's an instruction manual, after all. These are the words we live by. We strive to. Verse 2 of Proverbs 16, it says, all the ways of man are clean in his own eyes, but the eternal weighs the spirits. Commit your works unto the eternal, and your thoughts shall be established. If we're just going at it on our own, it seems right. It seems right. All of the ways are clean, well, just pure and righteous. That's the way we see ourselves. But we've got to bring God into it so that we can see, so that we can understand and know the plague of the human heart, so that we can identify the sickness, the disease that spreads, and then go to God to get rid of it. Proverbs 12:15 says, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkens unto counsel is wise. You see, we need a lot of counsel. The truth of it is, never mind what a famous politician might say, the truth of it is, we all harbor hatred and animosity in our hearts, and we need God to get it out. We need God to heal us. It's God's love. If we're truly living the way of love and loving God and our fellow man, it's going to be because God's love is dwelling in us. It says in verse 4, this is still in Proverbs 16, the Lord has made all things for himself, yes, even the wicked for the day of evil. Another translation says, the Lord has prepared everything for his purpose, even the wicked for the day of disaster. It's all unfolding the way that he's revealed in Bible prophecy. Verse 5, everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the eternal. Though hand join in hand, he shall not be unpunished. Proud in heart. Pride. That's the root cause of so many egregious sins. It really does motivate us to sin. Pride does. And Mr. Armstrong made the point many, many, many times that this is why human beings find it so difficult to admit that they're wrong, because there's so much pride and vanity in our hearts. Pride sets us against our Creator. It causes us to seek our own ways instead of God's. And it's why over and again in the Bible, God says he hates it. He hates pride. In fact, this verse we just read says that he retaliates against it. His final judgment will stand. Verse 6, it says, by mercy and truth, iniquity is purged, and by the fear of the eternal, men depart from evil. When a man's ways please the eternal, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. This is a wonderful promise, these two verses, that if we're living the right way, if we're pleasing God, we can even win over enemies. We can let our lights shine over all the earth. We can set an example for this world of how to live God's way. Verse 8, it says, let me read this from the New Living Translation. It says, better to have little with godliness than to be rich and dishonest. It's better to be righteous and poor physically than to have material riches and to be dishonest. Verse 9 says, a man's heart devises his way, but the eternal directs his steps. Another translation says, we can make our plans, but the eternal determines our steps. Commit your life to God. Look to God. Don't just go through the motions. Don't just listen to the sound or the message or read the article. But be a doer. Open the Bible and look into it. See what it says. And then start practicing it. The prophet Jeremiah said that we can't even direct our own steps. We need God. It's not in man. It's not in man to walk to direct his steps. We don't have what it takes. In fact, what seems like the right thing to do humanly is what ends in disaster. That's what the proverb says. The prophet Jeremiah, he said in that same passage about man not able to direct his own steps, he said, "Oh Lord, correct me, but with judgment, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing, but definitely correct me. Show me. Set my life on the proper course. Show me the way to go. Open the door so that I can see what you want for me to see. Give me the faith. Give me the courage to walk on through." This is the attitude. This is the heart of a true Christian. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to submit feedback so that we can read it on this program. You can write us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.